Excision number 23221, reel 1.
Major Mole, reel 1. Was there a tradition of military service in your family?
Yes, indeed. Yes, my father was a soldier and had been in the Royal Ulster Rifles. All my life I was a soldier's son, as it were.
Were you destined for the army from the cradle?
I don't think so. I don't think I would have gone into the army at all had it not been for the fact that during the war, towards the end of the war, my father was killed in Holland, commanding 129 Brigade at Nijmegen. My mother was left widow, and there were five of us. My older brother had gone to India, where he was with the Gurkhas, he didn't actually go into action, but he was learning to be a Gurkha, as it were, in Bangalore. And I was sort of 16, 17, and rather sort of drifted into national service, and then drifted more or less into Sandhurst.
Did you have any strong inclinations to any other sort of occupation at that time?
I did think of becoming a priest, since I'm a Catholic, but I don't think it wasn't very strong. And I suppose I felt in a way that I had to perhaps go and do something to help my mother, and the army seemed to me, there was a very close association with my mother's friends and with the Royal Ulster Rifles, and I knew that I would find a welcome home there to a certain extent.
Had you done any military or pre-military training while you were at school?
Yes, I was. I think I was a bit of a sort of wimp at school, and I was at a Jesuit school, and the rector there knew my father was a soldier, and etc. And I think he thought, I'm going to make a man of this chap, and he made me head of the of CCF or whatever it was, the corps.
What sort of training did you do in the Corps? What was the syllabus which you followed?
I really can't remember. I think it was very, very basic fire and movement and section attacks and marching past and a little bit of firing 2-2 range. Particularly, I enjoyed shooting on the 2-2.
Do you think that what you were taught there was a sound foundation for subsequent military training once you joined the army as such?
I suppose it could have been to a certain extent. Yes. I suppose it could have had some sort of influence on it.
You called up in 1948, I think. How was that done? What happened?
I was just called up as a national serviceman. And I went as a national serviceman, an exceedingly innocent young Catholic boy had been brought up by the Jesuits to Bury St. Edmunds, where all I could hear from morning to night was the most appalling language. I couldn't understand one single word of what anybody was talking about, since every word began with F, whether it was an adjective, verb or noun, and I find that a most interesting experience.
How long did it take to adjust to that rather brutal introduction?
My memory is really rather. I don't think I was terribly concerned. I think I just found it such an extraordinary change.
What did you learn at Bury St. Edmunds?
Can't remember really. How to clean boots, I suppose, and how to. I suppose I learnt about mixing with people, because of course one had led a fairly sheltered life prior to that.
And what sort of chaps were there in your squad?
I can't remember.
How did you find the discipline?
My memories of Bury St. Edmunds are really very limited. It was stronger after that. I went to to Omagh, to the North Irish Brigade training centre. And I hadn't, although I think the Ulster Rifles knew I was obviously officer material, I wasn't selected initially as officer material. And I didn't go in, I didn't go into the officer stream, as it were. I just went in as a rifleman.
What did they do with you there?
That was very, that was really quite tough training, because it was in 48, I suppose, and that was an extremely cold winter. It was a particularly ferocious winter. And I liked Northern Ireland. It was interesting, and my company commander was subsequently General Corin Purton, who I don't know if you noticed on television last week, was at the Battle of Saint-Nazaire, was one of the commando leaders. And he was a remarkable man, and even now looks about 18, and he was had a considerable impression on me, because within a week he knew everybody's name in the platoon, and if there was any question of anybody going up the ropes, he could go, he would be the first one up. And since I could never get up a rope, I was particularly impressed by this.
Was there a particular emphasis on physical training at that stage?
Yes, there was a lot. Shooting and cross-country. I was a, one thing I was good at was cross-country running. Mm. And it's good to be good at something in the army if you're a bit of a weed, which I was at that stage. And shooting. I was a good shot, so. And I really enjoyed my time there, and I think it helped me in tremendous as I got on in it went on in the army. I learned more, I think, and I became a lance corporal, the thing. I learned more there about handling and being involved with people and understanding. I remember being absolutely terrified when I was once sent up to the officer's mess to get something, and you suddenly realize later on when you're an officer, the gulf which exists and the awe, with, certainly at that time, with which the officer's mess was in respect of a private soldier.
Was it anything like the awe that had existed between boys and masters at school?
Well, I don't really know. Perhaps the word awe is not particularly right, but I suppose it was a certain that sort of thing, but I probably heightened to that. I think with school you were rather inclined to laugh at your teachers, and I don't think you laughed too often at the officers so much. It wasn't there.
What about your relations with the NCOs when you were in the ranks as a rifleman?
I think I got on reasonably well with them. I think they must have thought I was the most extraordinary chap to have around, because I was quite different to them.
What were the other fellows like in your squad at Iron Brigade?
I really, the extraordinary thing, I simply don't remember any of them strongly at all. Mm. I didn't have that sort of memory of them, but I didn't really have very much in the way of difficulty.
Were they local chaps, do you think, or were they from all over?
Well,
the country?
They were from all over Ireland, and that was the interesting thing about soldiering in Ireland at that time, that certainly the North Irish Brigade, or subsequently the Royal Ulster Rifles, half the men were from the south.
Presumably they would have all been volunteers.
Oh, they were all volunteers, because that was basically, it wasn't just national service, that was all from all over the place.
How was it then that you did eventually go to Sandhurst if you weren't originally in the potential officers?
Well, I suppose the Ulster Rifles knew very well I was in the background, as it were, and I suppose General Corin Purton, or Major Purton, he was then, put me up for a thing, and I and then went to an RCB and went on to Sandhurst.
What did you have to do at the RCB?
Cross a river with two matchsticks. No, you know that sort of, you, there you are, a group of eight of you, and you have to, with two logs and a plank, and decide how you're going to get across and get everybody across, that sort of thing. And so give, like that, and it was sort of one of the things that struck me as being very strange. And I suppose they're looking for the leadership, etc. And the other thing was the lecturettes which were always, I can't remember what I lectured on, but that was the sort of thing that dominated a feeling.
A matter of cantilevers and reef knots.
I suppose it was that sort of thing, yeah.
They think that's a test of practicality, I think.
I think so.
What happened to you when you got to Sandhurst?
I don't really know what you mean, what happened. I seemed to sort of settle in quite quickly. I was in Blenheim Company. And
where were you living?
Lived in the old college. Mm-hmm. And I think I enjoyed Sandhurst enormously. I think we had a nice group of cadets, all became good friends, and we had a good company commander and a splendid CSM called Mr. Tankard. And I enjoyed my time at Sandhurst.
What did you actually do there? What was the trading in those days?
Great deal of drill. Being put in the book, marching around the square. And the sort of academic and the military. There really was hardly any military training at all. It was, apart from drill and shooting, there was no tactics or anything of that sort. It was just entirely really drill and shooting and academic studies. Mm. And bicycle drill. You had to learn how to ride a bicycle.
Had you done any tactical training when you were in the depot in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, I suppose up section and platoon level.
Mm. Presumably you'd had to serve as a section commander when you were a lance corporal.
Yes, yes, but only sort of basic training level.
How were you actually assessed while you were on the course at Sandhurst? What measures did they apply to get some impression of you?
I suppose it was a combination of your educational attainments and your, I don't know, how you got on, I suppose. I mean, I ended up as a senior sergeant. I did the modern pentathlon because I was a good runner and a good shooting man, and the main aim of that was to get off morning parade, because you could go riding twice or three times a week, and swimming. And I really enjoyed the modern pentathlon. It was great. And you know, everything about Sandhurst to me, it was a tremendous sense of pride at Sandhurst, and those wonderful Saturday parades when the adjutant was there and the band was there, and the whole atmosphere of Sandhurst was very impressive, I think. And the army still was held in high regard, and I think it was a wonderful training.
Do you remember anything about the academic side of it? What academic subjects you had to?
I remember studying meteorology, which was quite interesting, since I knew nothing about it, and I didn't even know anything about it at the end, but it was quite interesting. Funnily enough, we didn't do enough, in my opinion, of military history at that time. We hardly did any military history.
Meteorology might have been of some practical value.
Yes. I don't know why we did it, but it was quite fun.
Presumably you were already destined for the Royal Ulster Rifles when you were at Sandhurst.
Yeah, I think the Adjutant General at that time was General Sir James Steele, otherwise known as Jarzel Steele, and he had been a great personal friend of my father's, and there was absolutely no question about it that I was going into the Ulster Rifles. In fact, Robin Bruford Davis, who I think you've already spoken to, was just ahead of me. I was in take two, he was in take 1A, and his father had also been an Ulster Rifleman, so both of us were clearly destined, and nobody else got a chance in hell. In fact, I met subsequently a general who had to go in the engineers. His name was General Brown, a small, very small Ulsterman. He died recently, but he told me at the time that he was exceedingly cross with me getting in the Ulster Rifles, because he was an Ulsterman true and true, and a proper, proper good Protestant, and what the hell was I doing coming in?
A Catholic and a foreigner.
A Catholic and a foreigner.
When you passed out, I think you then went to the 1st Battalion, Ballykinla.
That's right.
Yes. How were you received when you arrived there, freshly minted, with your pip on each shoulder?
If I remember rightly, Robin joined with me. I think we went from Belfast. I can't even remember how we got over. I suppose we must have gone over on the ferry. And from Belfast, we went by train to Ballykinla. And I remember being full of concern at actually joining the regiment the first time. But they treated us extremely well. And Ulster, the rifle regiment, particularly Ulster Rifles, you were expected to call everybody by their Christian names straight away, except the colonel, who was commandant. You called him commandant, but everybody else was. And that was the atmosphere. It was extremely friendly. But on the other hand, it was an extraordinary mixture of people, because they were highly decorated. A lot of them had been commanding battalions and things during the war. Most of them were MCs or double MCs, and extraordinarily strong characters, and very heavy drinking. So it was quite an experience.
It sounds rather like a breaking in.
It was, yes, and it was great fun. There were the Rangers at Ballykin, and head of my platoon, and we had a pack of beagles which we hunted, and there was the sea nearby, and I really enjoyed it.
Were you given a platoon as soon as you arrived?
I think I was. I can't remember.
Do you remember your first encounter with them?
Not very clearly at that stage, no. I remember being dined in, because we were the first officers to be dined in. They introduced the idea of dining us in. And the colonel being dined out was somebody called Dougie Swinburne. And of course we were all broke, but it was considered one had to drink. Or the thoughts in the regiment was very much on drinking lots of Guinness, and I remember getting exceedingly paralytic, which was their intention, and then going and hitting the commanding officer as hard as I could with the Illustrated London News on his head towards the end of the thing, which he took with remarkable ease. I think I was taken out, but nobody worried about it very much.
Do you remember why it was you decided to hit the commanding officer with the Illustrated London News?
I think we were just having fun. I don't know why. He seemed quite a nice chap.
I mean, was this during a game of Are You There, Moriarty, or something of that sort?
Sort of thing, but I think it was just a general feeling that perhaps he should be hit on the head. I don't know how I was ducked out of the armies. Yeah, I think it's a measure, really, the Ulster Rifles, that nobody seemed to mind.
How long do you think it took you, once you'd got your platoon, to get to know them and be accepted by them as a...
I don't think that was really much of a problem, because I suppose because of what I'd been fortunate enough to do by being as Lance Corporal. And later on, when we left Ballykinla and went to Colchester prior to going to Korea, I became weapon training officer and in charge of the snipers, which I thought was quite fun.
How did you train them? What skills did you give them, and how did you go about?
Well, I think it was all very amateur. Mm. And not very brilliant when you came to think of it afterwards, but I suppose we concentrated on using sniper rifles and getting expert at that, but we didn't do really an awful lot about brilliant tactics about the way snipers should behave, I don't think. Camouflage and that sort of thing.
Where did you do this? Were you able to find suitable places around Colchester?
Yes, I think there were some quite good ranges around Colchester. I can't really remember too much. But Colchester was a was a very exciting time because it was the excitement of getting ready to go. And then we used to go up to Norfolk, to the training grounds in Norfolk.
Thetford, would that
at
be?
At Thetford, yes. And we spent a lot of time there.
What were you practicing when you were on the Thetford training ground?
Well, I think we were practicing, you know, platoon company attacks, night attacks, the penalty of regimental training for war, really. We really didn't know very much about mountain warfare, and they didn't, nor did anybody.
I was about to say, one thing about Thetford is it is rather flat.
Yes. No, I don't think I don't think there was a great deal of thought about how you were going to confront the concepts of mountain warfare, because I don't think anybody knew anything about it at that time.
Had you seen the Korean War as a prospect on the horizon? Had you had any anticipation of it before it broke out?
I don't think so. I don't even think I knew where Korea was. Like most people, I certainly didn't have much of a concept of it.
You mentioned the sniper rifle. What was the sniper rifle of those days?
If I can remember rightly, it was a device, telescopic sight put on the rifle, and it was that was rather fascinating.
What sort of distance could you shoot accurately with the telescopic sight?
I can't remember, I suppose 600, possibly a little less, I don't know. Perhaps six. I mean, you could shoot 600, we did shoot 600 on the range anyway without a sniper rifle at a very big target, so I suppose with a sniper rifle it was, but I don't suppose you were really expected to use a sniper rifle at that range. But it was more a sort of theory, having the sniper section. I don't think it was taken terribly seriously. I think I had about six or seven men who helped me in the weapon training officer's store, and they were theoretically snipers. I don't think we took it anything like as serious as we could have done.
And did you have any idea, for example, about how to give them a list of priorities for targeting once they were deployed?
No, I don't think it was that. I'm afraid it was a bit amateur, the whole thing.
But it sounds like you did do some serious working up.
Oh, we certainly did, yes. And
that doesn't sound amateurish. That sounds
I don't think. I think one's got to be that the Ulster rifles at that time were. I think they were an absolutely super battalion. They were tremendous esprit de corps, terrific NCOs, outstanding group of officers, and it was a very very it was a terrific spirit in the region. Particularly Catholics and Protestants. Although I had no idea about the being an Englishman, I hadn't really understood the significance of it until St. Patrick's Day at Colchester, where we the battalion went on parade, and they said, "Fall out the Catholic officers." Or I can't remember, "Fall in the Catholic officers," and the battalion fell in as Catholics and Protestants. The second in command of the battalion was a chap called Tony Blake, who was the only other Catholic apart from myself, and he excused himself from going on parade that day. So I, as a second lieutenant, commanded half the battalion, which gave me great excitement, and marched through Colchester to church. Unfortunately, the pipe band led us, and we had two bands, pipe band and a regimental band. The regimental band went with the others, and the pipe band came with us. And the pipe major was called Pipe Major Woods, and he played the whole way to church the sash my father wore. And I, being extremely innocent, was marching in front with great pride, and there was a tremendous lot of fock on blinding behind by these yes, yes. So that caused quite a stir.
What happened on the 12th of July?
I don't know. I can't remember.
How did you get out to Korea?
And that was like something out of an old novel. We went and we sailed from Liverpool on the Empire Pride, the whole battalion. I went up in the advance party, and the Minister of War, Mr. Fred Mullings, or Mullen, or whatever his name was at that time, came to see the regiment off, and they had bands and thousands of people standing in front of the Leiva building to see us off to war. And before we went, everybody went on leave, but they had to sign a thing saying that if they didn't come back, they would be considered to be deserters and would be arrested as such. And everybody came back except, I suppose a few people didn't, but there was one particular rifleman whose name suddenly escapes me, it'll come to a minute, but he decided that it would be quite interesting to come down and see the battalion off. So he came and stood in the crowd in his civilian clothes. And somebody, I think the regiment police or somebody watching from the side of the ship saw him. So they took a posse and captured him. His name was Clancy. Yeah. And they captured Clancy and took him onto the ship in his civilian clothes. And he was locked up down below in the hold. And subsequently got an extremely good MM. And I met him 50 years later at St. Paul's at the memorial service, and he moved to Canada, where he'd been very successful running a trucking company. But that voyage out was extraordinary, because we changed for dinner every night, I think. And once a week we changed into mess kit. And there were four of us, I think, in a cabin, and how the poor steward managed to get our mess kits sorted out. But we had a lovely time on that ship. It was very interesting. And I, being the weapon training officer, used to organize all the shooting from the back of the ship, which we did the whole time, either beer bottles or beer cans. And it was very interesting. First time, sort of, never having been abroad, to go through Sea of Gibraltar and then through Suez Canal. And when we were in Aden, the battalion did a route march through Aden, and the same in Colombo, and same in Singapore.
Were you able to have runs ashore as well as route marches?
I think after that we went ashore for a bit, yes. I remember getting in Colombo. My aunt was in Colombo with on her way out to India, out to Australia. She was going in with the Governor General to be of Australia, and they were on the Oriana. And I remember going onto the Oriana to meet her. And when I was in Singapore, my brother, who was then in the police in Singapore, came out and met me, and we went ashore. But we had a lot of fun.
Apart from the shooting, what else did the troops have to do to keep them occupied on board?
I suppose they did a certain amount of weapon training. I don't know if you could do a bit of weapon training on board. Not very much. A lot of PT, I suppose. And it was a very small ship, and the whole battalion on board, and there were no... all the men slept in hammocks down below. And I can remember when you were a ship's duty officer, going round the whole ship at night and during the day, the smell beneath decks was quite strong of sort of human, what's the name?
Human animals close together.
Yeah. But it's extraordinary when you come to think of it, that that must be one of the last times, I suppose, when a battalion went to war as a battalion, by boat, as it were, and we got to the other end. We handed in all our sort of regimental kit, etc., and it was all boxed up, and that was it.
Where did you land?
We landed at Pusan, to be met by